Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Man charged with assaulting girlfriend and firing handgun. A 40-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly assaulted his girlfriend and fired one round from a handgun within city limits. Mark Anthony Rojero was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. Rojero has a charge of unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon, a third-degree felony, and is being held by U.S. Marshals. The reported assault happened around 10:50 p.m. October 17th, in the 1300 block of Zanetta Avenue. Officers reportedly made contact with the victim, identified as Valerie Rodriguez. She stated her boyfriend, Rojero, had just assaulted her. Rodriguez stated to police that Rojero was using a black handgun to strike the back of her car when she confronted him. While he was still holding the handgun, Rojero pushed Rodriguez into the grass, dirt of the neighboring home. Rodriguez stated she got back to her feet when Rojero pushed her a second time. Rodriguez reportedly detailed the second time she was pushed, she hit the back of her head on the concrete street. Rodriguez stated that sometime during the assault, Rojero shot a round out of the handgun in an unknown direction. Officers also spoke with two witnesses, identified as Amy Menyarez and Ernesto Menyarez, who stated Rodriguez arrived at their home around 9:50 p.m., upset about an argument with Rojero. Amy Menyarez and Ernesto Menyarez stated they heard banging coming from outside, and when they exited the home to see what was going on, they saw Rojero striking Rodriguez's vehicle with a black handgun. Amy Menyarez reportedly went back inside to call 911, while Ernesto Menyarez remained outside with Rojero and Rodriguez. Ernesto Menyarez stated he saw Rodriguez be pushed down on the street by Rojero. When Rodriguez got back to her feet and tried to walk away, Rojero pushed her a second time into the dirt grass of the neighbor's yard. Witnesses stated that Rojero had the black handgun the entire time the assault was taking place. Both Amy and Ernesto Menyarez heard one shot, but they had gone back inside to get away from the incident and didn't see the gun actually fire. Officers reportedly saw injuries on Rodriguez that included a cut on her left pinky finger, scrapes on her right palm, and redness swelling on the back of her head. Officers also saw dirt, grass on Rodriguez's clothing and damages to her vehicle that were consistent with being struck by a hard object. Rojero was located and detained at his and Rodriguez's home in the 3000 block of West 3rd Street. A search warrant for the residence was later obtained in order to locate the handgun used during the assault. While conducting the search, a black Ruger 9mm was found in Rojero's bedroom underneath clothing inside a laundry hamper. Rojero was arrested, charged, and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on October 18th. Rojero has one bond for the aggravated assault with a deadly weapon charge that totals $50,000. He was still in custody as of Wednesday morning. Man charged with assaulting girlfriend, cop, and cat. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed that a 36-year-old man was arrested after he assaulted his girlfriend, a police officer, and slammed a cat on a hard tile floor. Kenton Gaines was charged with assault on a peace officer, a third-degree felony, cruelty to non-livestock animals, a third-degree felony, assault causing bodily injury to a family member, a Class A misdemeanor, and resisting arrest, a Class A misdemeanor. The reported incident happened at 12:31 a.m. October 19th in the 1200 block of Wilshire Drive. The victim, identified as Jennifer Smith, stated her boyfriend, Gaines, had slammed her cat on the hard ground and was intoxicated. OPD Corporal John Chavez made entry to the listed residence wearing a distinct full police uniform. Gaines forcefully extended his arm into Chavez's chest, which caused pain, while yelling and demanding the officer get out of his house. Gaines actively resisted arrest by stiffening his body, continuously pulling his hands away, and using his body mass to prevent officers from gaining control of him, despite being lawfully ordered to stop and allow officers to effect an arrest. Gaines was reportedly eventually placed under arrest for assaulting Chavez, a third-degree felony, and resisting arrest, a Class A misdemeanor. Smith stated that Gaines had picked up her small cat from the kitchen patio room and yelled that Smith is going to feel his pain. As Smith attempted to grab her cat from Gaines' possession, Gaines shoved Smith, which caused her to lose balance and caused her back to strike the corner of the hard kitchen countertop. Officers reportedly saw a large red and raised injury to Smith's mid-upper shoulder blade that was consistent with a corner of the kitchen countertop. Gaines then tortured the cat by slamming it onto the hard tile floor, which caused blood to emit from its nose. Officers saw fresh blood coming from the cat's nostrils, watery eyes, and it appeared to be in distress. Gaines was transported and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on October 19th. He has four bonds totaling $22,500 and was still in custody as of Wednesday afternoon. Man charged with throwing cell phone at ex-girlfriend. A 31-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly threw a cell phone that hit his ex-girlfriend in the face. This was the third time since May that his ex-girlfriend filed charges on him. Ronaldo Arevalo was charged with continuous violence against the family, a third-degree felony. On August 29th, officers responded to the Dollar Tree at 800 North Maple Avenue in reference to harassment. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit stated, officers made contact with the victim, identified as Tina Torres, who stated she had been involved in an on-and-off relationship over the past 6 months with her ex-boyfriend Arevalo. Torres reportedly told police that Arevalo has physically assaulted her in the past, and she has filed multiple cases against him. The first case happened May 14th, while the second happened June 25th. Torres showed officers a scar on the left side of her cheek and stated on August 8th she was having an argument with Arevalo when he threw a cell phone at her, which struck her in the face, busting open her cheek. Torres photographed her injuries that night it happened and the day after. Torres reportedly provided officers with the photographs that showed her to have a 1-inch cut on her left cheek, which was consistent with her story. Arevalo was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on October 19th. He has one bond totaling $10,000, and he was still in custody as of Wednesday afternoon. Obituary and death notices from the Odessa American for Thursday. On Sunday, October 17th, Richard Justin Jorgensen passed away at the age of 36. Justin, J.J., was born on January 21st, 1985, to Molly Beard Taylor and Ricky Jorgensen. Justin is survived by his wife and best friend, Abby, his two daughters, Maggie and Evie, his mother and stepfather, Molly and Dennis Taylor, his father and stepmother, Bernadette and Ricky Jorgensen, his sister, Molly Ann Silestine, and her husband, Jeremy, his sister, Emily Williamson, and her husband, Taylor, his stepbrother, Colby Taylor, his stepsister, Kristen Powell, his nieces, his grandmother, Judy Barker, and his grandparents, Sherry and Carl Beard. He is also survived by Abby's parents, Katie and Martin Graves, her brother, True Graves, her grandmother, Kathy Young, and many close aunts, uncles, cousins, and friends. We rejoice in knowing that Justin is now reunited with his beloved grandmother, Margaret Beard. A visitation will be held from 6 to 8 in the evening on Thursday, October 1st, at the Rock Church, Odessa. A memorial service will be held at 10:30 in the morning on Friday, October 22nd, at Crossroads Church in Odessa. If desired, memorial donations may be made to Reach Recovery, a ministry of the Rock Church, Odessa. www.therockodessa.com. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Kathy Yvonne Johnson Fraley, 71, died Monday, October 18th in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Saturday, October 16th, 2021. Viewpoints. Closing arguments as election nears. Early voting begins Monday. Questions for the candidates. Dan Corrales, at-large candidate. Leadership that goes the extra mile. I'm writing this with pen and paper as I finish a ride-along with the Midland Police Department, Charlie Side, evening 1700 to 0300, 5 p.m. to 3 a.m. It changes your perspective, spending nearly 7 hours with a young father in uniform and many other men and women willing to put their lives on the line to protect our families. At dusk, as we got started, I saw a different family, one of law enforcement officers, that respond to a fellow officer's call with the greatest sense of urgency. Why is that so remarkable? I have a profound sense of respect for their sense of duty to us, to each other, and to do the right thing in a professional manner. First responders share a sense of courage, like firefighters that run into a burning building when everyone else is running away from it. The Midland Fire Department operates 10 fire stations covering 900 square miles. I've visited each and every one. They also have a sense of selflessness. There are other jobs that might pay more, but you cannot put a price on the sense of pride that comes with working in a professional, accredited police department like MPD, or an ISO Class 1 rated fire department like MFD. It means they are the tip of the spear and pike. Why is my closing argument about first responders? The previous questions asked about our infrastructure, governance in a pandemic, and how to handle our parks. Public safety merits a discussion because you cannot avail yourself of the above without it. That is why more than 60% of the general fund budget is allocated for it. The needs of our city are many and our resources finite. So where do we go from here? This past year and a half, we have had to adapt as a community, as business owners, as workers. Our government has to adapt as well. We are blessed to still be here, but the world we live in today is not the one we knew yesterday. It's not the one we knew growing up here or anywhere for that matter. It's not the strongest that survive, not the most intelligent either. It is those most willing to adapt to change. This city that I have a passion for, that I love, needs elected officials that know what servant leadership is. To adapt, you have to make informed decisions based on observations. Those observations come from having your boots on the ground with the men and women that work for this city, that work in this city. We the people still mean something. It means that every Midlander, rich or poor, white collar or blue collar, man or woman, wants to be afforded the opportunity to be heard. We want decisions to be made for the betterment of the entire city and county, for our children and grandchildren. We want elected officials that have a plan. My plan has been to do my homework, to go to city council meetings, commissioners' court meetings, MDC meetings, PNZ meetings, Parks and Rec, and Animal Services Commission meetings. We can work smarter, not just harder, if we learn to work together. I humbly ask for your first vote on Monday, but I am just as honored to have your second vote for Midland City Council at large. Vote for Dan Corrales if you want your council member to go the extra mile for you, Midland. I firmly believe that is what you deserve. Dustin Johnson, at-large candidate. I'm running for everyday citizens. My name is Dustin Johnson, and I'm running for Midland City Council at large, and I'm asking for your vote. I know the struggles Midlanders experience because I've experienced them too. I know how to live on a tight budget and will respect taxpayer dollars. I understand having city council meetings at 10 a.m. Tuesdays means excluding a large portion of our hardworking population. That is why I'm going to commit to hosting personal evening meetings to hear from my constituents in person. I want to represent all of Midland, not just certain small groups. Early voting begins Monday, and Election Day is November 2nd. Please vote Dustin Johnson for Midland City Council at large. Robin Poole, at-large candidate. People of Midland truly motivate me. As I try to come up with my lasting argument as to why the people of Midland should vote for me, I am reminded that the very people I am asking to cast their ballots for me are the same people that I will be serving if elected. And therein lies my answer. The people of Midland have to remain at the heart of my campaign. It's the people of Midland that have motivated me to run for office and work to change the narrative surrounding our great city. The people of Midland have created a culture where visitors and outsiders know us by our character. It's time the quality of life in Midland matches the quality of its great people. During campaigns, it's easy for those of us running to voice our opinions, give our great ideas, and appear to have it all together. However, at the heart of it, we are the people, too, and we have stories that make up our lives and have shaped who we are. In my final editorial for the Midland Reporter-Telegram, it's my hope that I can take a little time to incorporate a little of my story and speak to you person to person. My father passed away when I was only 3 years old. After his death, my mother continued raising me as a single mother on the south side of Midland. We didn't have much money, but we had lots of love to share, and I watched my mother sacrifice and work hard to provide for us. The lessons and values she taught me are still at the center of who I am. She taught me honesty, integrity, humility, and how to be a fighter. I worked hard to graduate in the top 10% of my high school class, and I worked even harder to save up for college. As a young single mom, I put myself through college, raised my son, and was able to graduate magna cum laude. After marrying the love of my life in 2012, I have walked through various trials that have shaped my character and refined my values. Brain surgery and the death of my sweet mama are the two hardest events I have ever walked through, but having my family and faith to guide me, I learned invaluable lessons that have only given me a stronger conviction that my life has purpose, and I will do whatever I can to serve my family and my community to bring forth the kind of change I want to see in this world. I never expected it to be through service on the city council, but I am ready, willing, able, and excited to give it my all. Incorporating the values and lessons I have learned throughout life into the issues we face as a community will make for common sense solutions and answers that seek to understand citizens from every walk of life. Priorities. Having watched my mother make the most out of every dollar she earned not only set an example for me to follow as a young mom, but it made me aware that there are sometimes purchases that we want to make that aren't, in fact, priorities. Due to the exponential growth Midland has experienced over the last decade, unfortunately, we have a wide assortment of both needs and wants. If elected to serve as your city council representative, I will first address the needs of the city and commit to funding projects that are at the core of the city's function. Citizens of Midland deserve good roads, quality water, top-of-the-line law enforcement and first responders, and well-maintained parks. Fiscal responsibility. I will serve with the belief that every dollar spent is first and foremost that of the taxpayer and must be used wisely. I know what it is to work hard and sometimes still find it hard to make ends meet. I will never take for granted your hard-earned dollars and money that you invest into our city through your taxes. Ready to serve, ready to listen. My mother taught me from an early age that serving others is not so much about the actions you take, but about the posture of your heart. In order to meet people's needs, you have to be willing to listen to them. As your city council representative, I will serve with the belief that communication is paramount. I will make myself available to meet with constituents who have concerns, and I will certainly reply to emails and phone calls. Being an at-large council member, I will make it a priority to meet with and listen to constituents in each district and invest time in all areas of the city. It is my hope that my heart for this city has truly come through during my campaign. I am committed to serving our city and its great people, and I look forward to making our surroundings, our environment, and our energy correspond with the character of our great people. I'm Robin Poole, and I would be honored to have your vote. Spencer Robnett, at-large candidate. Record that stands up to challenges. I always enjoy election season because it provides an opportunity to have structured conversations about the issues that face Midland. It also allows political opponents and this community a chance to challenge incumbents on their records, and that is a good thing. This paper has been gracious enough to provide a forum for my views on infrastructure funding, pandemic response, and our parks system. These issues only scratch the surface of the challenges ahead, and I want to make sure you know where my priorities are if reelected to serve as an at-large councilman. Driving partnerships, investing in our first responders, investing in infrastructure, and advocating for practical allocation of your tax dollars are where my priorities still lie. Driving partnerships. The city of Midland cannot succeed without partnering with other local municipalities, nonprofits, and corporate stakeholders. The challenges we face as a community must be solved collectively, and I will continue to search for partnerships to solve our most critical issues to help make your tax dollar go further. Projects like the upgraded wastewater plant, downtown Centennial Park, and the new Midland Animal Shelter should be used as templates for partnerships on other projects going forward. Collectively, these projects save the Midland taxpayer over $145 million without interest. We are working on additional partnerships now for the new Hogan Park, among others, and I will continue to do so. First responder funding, retention, and growth. As Midland grows, so does our need for adequate police and fire protection. The city of Midland property tax rate is so low that our property tax collections do not even cover 100% of our annual police and fire operating budgets. Although our police and fire departments are both over 90% staffed at the moment, our population growth and increase in oil and gas activity will continue to strain our first responders. We must continue to have honest conversations about the funding required to properly staff and operate our police and fire departments. This includes competitive wages, career progression, and training opportunities for both departments. We are having material conversations now about a new regional police and fire training center led by the City of Midland, and I hope this project is able to break ground in the next 3 years. Infrastructure investments. Since I was elected in 2014, the City of Midland has invested over $300 million into permanent infrastructure in the city, with $130 million of that $300 million being privately funded. In this year's budget alone, the City of Midland will spend more than $25 million repairing, rebuilding, or maintaining roads inside our city limits. In addition to our roadway investments, the extension of water and sewer to Northeast Midland will open up thousands of acres of land for development to support additional housing, schools, and commercial uses. This is the greatest short-term opportunity we have to make a meaningful impact in area housing supply and the largest area we have for the city to grow unencumbered. Practical investments. The City of Midland has a lean, balanced budget with no room for misappropriated funds. We have passed a balanced budget every year for the 7 years that I've been on council. Our needs are too great to see hard-earned tax dollars wasted on frivolous projects. When we do have the ability to make a material investment in our city due to increased sales tax or other revenue, we cannot miss. A perfect example of a missed investment in Midland is the Midland Spaceport. With close to $30 million spent on the spaceport to date, this is the greatest waste of taxpayer money in the history of Midland. I will continue to oppose the spaceport and other frivolous uses of your tax dollars. This is my fifth city council election in 8 years, and I am truly grateful for all the support and feedback I received during these races. I hope my 7.5 years of service and decisions I have made with your tax dollars are enough to earn your vote and the opportunity to serve Midland for another term. I am proud to have represented the City of Midland as an at-large councilman for the last 7.5 years, and I would appreciate the opportunity to serve again. There are 2 at-large council seats open in this election, and I respectfully ask for one of your 2 votes. If I can answer any questions about my candidacy or where I stand on the issues before you vote this year, I can be reached at spencer@robnet4midland.com or phone 553-8545. Scott Dufford, District 1 candidate. The excellence you have come to expect. In 2001, I was honored to be sworn in as your District 3 representative, and in 2008, for your at-large representative, and then again in 2018, as your District 1 representative. Midland has experienced great change during that period. I've seen the city grow from a population under 100,000 in 2001 to 111,000 in 2010, to an unprecedented 150,000 in population in 2020. And I have seen firsthand how the Permian Basin, and especially Midland, has become strategically important to the energy needs of not only of our country, but to the world. Most recently, here are a few of my accomplishments that have kept Midland moving forward. $100 million for parks. $100 million for roads. $100 million for police and fire. Other highlights include $25 million annually spent on roads. Securing a long-term water supply. Secured $130 million in private funding for a wastewater plant upgrade as well. $18 million of private funding for our beautiful downtown Centennial Park. If reelected, I will continue to provide the level of excellence you have come to expect from your Midland City Council. My involvement sitting on numerous committees and boards, combined with my business experience since graduating from Texas A&M University in 1982, keeps me sharp and on point for Midland's future, not to mention my 9 grandchildren. Also, if reelected, I will continue to find new and innovative ways to partner with local businesses and foundations to help fund upgrades to our infrastructure and parks. This helps provide cost savings to our ratepayers and taxpayers, while also increasing our quality of place. The 2 biggest public-private partnerships I've been proud to be a part of in my 20 years of service included the upgrade to our wastewater treatment plant with Pioneer Natural Resources to the tune of $130 million, and downtown's Centennial Park that included many of our local businesses and foundations for $20 million. Both these endeavors have proven to be so successful that they will continue to be a model for future all-council projects moving forward. My priorities as the representative for District 1 and for the city as a whole are as follows. Ensure that we have a budget every year that reflects and addresses the needs of our city. I have never wavered in my commitment to keep our tax rate low and in check. I will ensure that we have a parks and recreation plan that provides upgrades to all our major parks and ball fields. Families should not have to spend thousands of dollars every year traveling to the I-35 corridor, Lubbock, or Amarillo to play ball. Implement long-term funding strategies for parks, roads, water, and sewer systems. Continue to look for funding solutions like public-private partnerships to save taxpayers' money while upgrading our infrastructure and park systems. Provide our police, fire, and city departments with the training, equipment, and resources they need to provide first-class services to the residents of Midland. As Midlanders, we should all take pride in our downtown because it reflects how a community sees itself. The beauty, safety, and utility of the Bush Convention Center, coupled with our Centennial Park, merit continued investment in downtown. Continue to invest in our downtown as it is vitally important to our city. We are living in unprecedented times, recently having dealt with the COVID-19 pandemic, negative oil prices, the Great Freeze, and the hiring of a new city manager. But through it all, the city is in a stronger position today thanks to my experience, leadership, sense of pragmatism, problem solving, and ability to work with others. It's at the city council level where decisions are made that directly affects the lives of people living, working, and visiting our great city. It has been my pleasure and an honor to serve the citizens of Midland these last 20 years. I am humbled that Midlanders have put their faith and trust in my judgment and leadership by continuing to reelect me over these past years. I have been up to the task of solving the myriad of challenges that we as Midlanders have all experienced in the past, and I look forward to solving the challenges we will face in the future. I am reaching out and asking for your vote in this election. I do have an opponent, and he is a strong advocate of equal application of policing. Source, Midland Reporter Telegram article, dated July 27, 2021. This reimagining of our police department would fundamentally change the way we do policing in our community and would make it entirely impossible to recruit and retain good police officers. Police officers throughout liberal-run cities across our country are under siege, and this policy, if implemented, would put our city in the same place as New York, Chicago, Portland, and Seattle. My opponent's idea could not be a worse change when it comes to keeping my fellow Midlanders safe in their homes. I will stand with and support our men and women who work to protect our great city every day. Thank you, Midland, in advance for your continued support and vote. Ross Schumann, District 1 candidate. Commit to the future, not the past. The old saying, commonly attributed to Albert Einstein, is that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. When it comes to our city, this seems to be the standard operating procedure, however. We have heard elected officials proclaim for years the need to fix our infrastructure, even going so far as to tell us about the need for a $100 million road bond to finally accomplish these goals. But with that road bond now set to expire in the next year, our infrastructure rating has yet to improve, and, in fact, has gotten worse since we approved that spending. What we need is not to continue increasing our spending to get the same or worse results, but to find those who are willing and able to make the amount of money they are already getting be used more efficiently and effectively. Since I started my campaign, I have discovered several projects and areas in where the city does not use our taxpayers' money efficiently. from mismanagement of our parks and public spaces to purchasing generators for our fire departments that are never hooked up, there are a lot of money being spent that could be used much more effectively. But in a time when our governor and several economists are calling for property tax relief for our citizens, we have a city council that continues to use tax rate increases as their primary means to attempt to accomplish their goals. As is typical with most levels of government, the problems in our city do not rise from a lack of public revenue, but instead from poor spending habits. Our city government needs to focus on building its foundation, ensuring our city is ready for the future, and for our next generation of citizens to continue building. We cannot continue to build on a poor foundation, remembering the words of Christ when he directed us to build our house on the rock. This metaphor for building our faith in his word is true. Our citizens expect a return on their investment when they pay their local taxes, and so far it does not seem as if they are getting such a return. Our city must prioritize how it uses its tax funds as a means that ensures every dollar is being maximized and that our citizens are seeing the value of continuing to live and grow their families here. We need to empower our citizens to have an easier means to create new business in our city instead of relying solely on the Midland Development Corporation to do so. It is time we use the tools given to us by the state and property tax abatements to give our citizens a chance to create business in our undeveloped or underdeveloped areas while not having to pay property taxes on that land for a period. This can be accessed by any citizen of our city for any business type, allowing citizens much more control of the type of businesses and services being created in their parts of town. It is time we create more economic diversity in our city, again, using property tax abatements to make our city more attractive to businesses from outside the city. By increasing our diversity, we decrease the impact to our city of oil industry busts while still being able to take advantage of booms. This gives our city more freedom to continue to thrive and survive while giving our citizens more jobs and industries to grow in. We must understand that as a city, we are in competition with those areas around us, and that by not using these tools in combination with our higher median wage and cost of living than most of the cities around us, we are at a distinct disadvantage to recruit new businesses outside of oil and gas. I am a father, a husband, a Texas Army National Guard veteran, and a citizen concerned about our city and its future. I know that there comes times for new ideas to be used, and now is that time in Midland. I know that we need people who are willing to do the work, to find new and innovative solutions to the issues currently facing us. Through my education, I have earned an MBA from Syracuse University, as well as being a certified project management professional from the Project Management Institute. I am experienced in solving problems in a variety of fields. Through my time in the military to working in oil and gas, I seek to find ways to make things more efficient. I work to build up those around me. While in the Texas Army National Guard, I was chosen to be one of 25 trainers in the state. I was chosen for this due to my ability to make those around me better and to help them achieve their best. As a father, I want to see our city be in a place my children never want to leave. Having 7 children, I am aware of the issues our young parents face in this city, with the lack of entertainment options for small children. While my kids are involved in local sports throughout the city, there needs to be more options for our parents to take their kids to go to. There must be more opportunities for our parents in our city to have fun with their kids without having to leave our city. There must be more entertainment for young adults, as our city gets younger and younger, to have fun and socialize within our city borders. It is time for our city to begin working toward the future and stop replicating the ideas of our past. If we want to see a difference in how our city is run or built, it is time we make a commitment to allow new ideas and people an opportunity to try. As a member of the Army Corps of Engineers, I learned the French word essaisons, which is the motto of the engineers, which this means is to tell those around us who have not been able to accomplish the mission, let us try. This is what I am asking of the people of Midland. We know what the issues are, and I humbly ask that you let me try to solve them. Note to readers, Midland City Council at-large candidate Michael Trost's final argument is missing this week because the Midland Reporter-Telegram didn't receive his final response before deadline. The format of questions for the candidates changed slightly to accommodate 6 instead of 7 replies as the election nears. Commentary. At-large City Council candidate field is a good one. Who's running? At-large, citywide. Dan Corrales, Dustin Johnson, Robin Poole, Spencer Robnett, Michael Trost. Note, top 2 vote-getters earn council seats. Voters can vote for 2 candidates. District 1, generally North Midland. Scott Dufford, Ross Schumann. By Stuart Doreen, editor. Election dates to remember. Early voting, October 18th through the 22nd, October 25th through the 29th at the elections office. Election day, November 2nd, 12 locations across Midland County. October 22nd, deadline to submit an application for ballot by mail. Source, Midland County Elections Office. There are 5 quality candidates running for the 2 at-large positions on the Midland City Council. They are Dan Corrales, Dustin Johnson, Robin Poole, Spencer Robnett, and Michael Trost. And no matter your taste in local representation, one or more of the 5 probably has you covered. I write this for 2 reasons. First, early voting for the District 1 and at-large Midland City Council races begins Monday. Election day is November 2nd. In the at-large race, an eligible voter can choose up to 2 candidates, not just 1. At the end of the day, the 2 candidates with the highest vote totals win seats. Second, I can't remember a race with so many people where so little have been said by the candidates or their known surrogates that could be considered negative. In fact, I have heard nothing. No outrageous statements about what's allegedly broken in government. No overly personal comments about another candidate. Nothing. These are campaigns based on their respective ideas and strengths. It has been refreshing. I hope that readers who are going to vote take a look at the opinion articles that the candidates wrote for the newspaper and MRT.com addressing infrastructure, governing during a pandemic, parks, and their closing statements. I bet you find 1 or 2 who share your vision for leadership in Midland. You have choices, and the same can be said for District 1. Don't let this opportunity to engage in your community go away. Thank you to MC. I want to thank Midland College for allowing the Reporter-Telegram to use the Carrasco Room for our City Council candidate forums. Midland College, and Gene Jones in particular, is supportive of the Midland Reporter-Telegram's mission to get more information to our voters. That has been a constant of the college, which has partnered with your newspaper when it comes to forums and the Reporter-Telegram Regional Spelling Bee. League of Women Voters. Inside today's Reporter-Telegram, pages C4 through C6, is information about the state propositions and the Midland City Council races. Please take an opportunity to educate yourself with the content that the League of Women Voters has provided. Voting matters. I disagree with those who believe statements can be made by not voting. Your participation matters. I also disagree with those who decide that voting isn't necessary because of what they have heard has happened elsewhere and that their votes won't be counted. Election Administrator Carolyn Graves and her team work hard to make sure that the votes of Midland County residents do matter and will be counted. When you go through the line, please know they will take care of you and give them a thank you for their work. Kudos to hospital leaders and healthcare workers. We appear to be on the downside of another COVID spike. I want to offer praise for Midland Health CEO Russell Myers and Russell Tippin, CEO of Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. They have taken a lot of arrows during the pandemic, but have continued to make themselves available to all questions on a regular basis. Still, all many want to do is blame, and some will go to great lengths on social media or other avenues to attempt to embarrass you or discredit you. What a shame. Our medical leaders deserve better. And to our healthcare workers, here's hoping the latest spike is our last. You have continued to show up for your shifts, worked in conditions that most of us wouldn't want, and have been abused by those with a PhD from the University of Social Media. You deserve better. From the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Saturday, October 16, 2021. League of Women Voters Information. Proposed tax amendments to the Constitution. Proposition 1. Raffles. The constitutional amendment authorizing the professional sports team charitable foundations of organizations sanctioned by the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association or the Women's Professional Rodeo Association to conduct charitable raffles at rodeo venues. Explanation. This amendment would add professional rodeo charitable foundations that are sanctioned by the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association or the Women's Professional Rodeo Association to the list of similar foundations for other professional sports associations that are authorized to hold raffles. These raffles may be held at rodeos in the state of Texas. Arguments 4. Many other professional sports charitable foundations, such as those for the NFL, MLB, NBA, are allowed to hold raffles. This proposed amendment broadens the field to include charitable rodeo foundations. Raffles of this type generate revenue for charities such as youth scholarship programs, the YMCA, and the American Cancer Society, among others. Arguments against. Raffles are another form of gambling which has negatively affected some Texas families. This form of gambling could eventually be extended beyond professional sports to many other organizations. Proposition 2. County government. The constitutional amendment authorizing a county to finance the development or redevelopment of transportation or infrastructure in unproductive, underdeveloped, or blighted areas in the county. Explanation. The Texas Constitution allows the legislature to authorize cities to issue bonds or notes to finance development or redevelopment of transportation or infrastructure in unproductive, underdeveloped, or blighted areas. Proposition 2 would amend the Texas Constitution to add counties to the political entities that can issue bonds or notes for that purpose, and to pledge increases in property tax revenues to repay the bonds or notes. If the county issues bonds for transportation improvements, the county may not allocate more than 65% of the property tax increases annually to repay the bonds, use the bond proceeds to finance toll road construction, operation, maintenance, or right-of-way acquisition. Arguments 4. Cities and towns can already finance infrastructure and transportation projects using bonds and notes. Counties also need the ability to address infrastructure issues. The development or redevelopment of infrastructure or transportation is expected to increase property values. Higher property values would result in higher tax revenues to repay those bonds. Texas is growing, and infrastructure and transportation development is needed for our future economic prosperity. The proposition would allow counties to use bonds to finance much-needed infrastructure projects. Arguments against. This proposition could extend debt, which may raise local property taxes. Opponents say that Texas's local debt ratio per person is too high, and issuing these bonds ties up future funds for debt service payments. these transportation or an infrastructure projects could divert revenues that may go to other government services or projects. Proposition 3, religious services. The constitutional amendment to prohibit this state or a political subdivision of this state from prohibiting or limiting religious services of religious foundation organizations. Explanation. The proposed amendment would add a new section to Article 1 of the Texas Constitution, the Texas Bill of Rights. It would prohibit state or local governments from prohibiting or limiting religious services. This proposed amendment is a reaction to restrictions put in place by the governor and some local governments during the COVID-19 pandemic. The restrictions required religious services to be held remotely or limited the number of people who could attend in person. The governor's restrictions were only in place for 12 days. He then declared that religious services are essential services and issued guidelines that said houses of worship should conduct as many activities as possible remotely and should follow federal guidelines when providing services in person. Arguments 4. Churches provide important support in a time of crisis. Closing churches reduces access to their services. Proponents say that closing churches violates religious freedom guaranteed by the Constitution. A government official should not be able to keep anyone from attending religious services. Arguments against. The proposed amendment could prevent local governments from enforcing safety measures during natural disasters such as tornadoes, hurricanes, or another pandemic. No faith group should have an unqualified right to spread a communicable disease. Existing law and the Texas Constitution adequately protect religious organizations. Proposition 4, judges. The constitutional amendment changing the eligibility requirements for a justice of the Supreme Court, a justice of the Criminal Court of Appeals, a justice of the Court of Appeals, and a district judge. Explanation. The proposed amendment would change the eligibility requirements for judges to run for office for the following: Supreme Court, Court of Criminal Appeals, and the Regional Courts of Appeals. Currently, the candidate for these courts must have been a practicing lawyer for at least 10 years, or a practicing lawyer or judge of a court of record for a combined total of at least 10 years. The proposed amendment would add the requirement that the candidate be licensed in the state of Texas for at least the last 10 years and defines the court of record as a state court or county court established by the legislature. Also, during the 10-year period, the candidate's license to practice law must not have been revoked or suspended. State district judge. Currently, the candidate must be a U.S. citizen, licensed to practice law in Texas, and have been a practicing lawyer for at least 4 years, or a practicing lawyer or judge of a Texas court for a combined total of 4 years. The proposed amendment would add the requirement that a district judge candidate be a Texas resident and would change the 4-year requirement to 8 years. Also, during the specified 8-year period, the candidate's license to practice law must not have been revoked or suspended. Arguments 4. Increasing the required number of years of legal experience for district court judges could result in a better qualified Texas judiciary. The quality and reputation of the Texas judiciary could be enhanced by the requirement that a judge's license cannot have been revoked or suspended. Arguments against. The requirement of additional years of experience as an attorney could adversely impact the diversity, age, race, gender, etc., of judicial candidates and judges. The amendment would restrict the size of the pool of candidates eligible to run for judicial positions, which could result in a judiciary that does not reflect the population. Proposition 5, judges. The constitutional amendment providing additional powers to the State Commission on Judicial Conduct with respect to candidates for judicial office. Explanation. The State Commission on Judicial Conduct now accepts complaints against and investigates and takes actions concerning alleged misconduct by judges currently in office. This proposed amendment would extend the commission's power to judicial candidates. Arguments 4. Allowing misconduct charges against judicial candidates could result in fairer judicial campaigns. Under current law, misconduct charges can be brought against judges currently in office, but not against candidates running for judicial office. Bringing complaints about judicial candidates, as well as judges in office, to the Commission on Judicial Conduct could ensure that complaints against both candidates and judges are heard and acted on. This could result in better screening of both candidates and judges. Arguments against. Opponents say this amendment is unnecessary. Those who have complaints of misconduct against judicial candidates can file them with other authorities, such as the state bar, the attorney general, or the appropriate district attorney for investigation and action. Adding complaints against judicial candidates to the Commission on Judicial Conduct could overburden the commission and its staff with new cases. Proposition 6. Caregiver visits. The constitutional amendment establishing a right for residents of certain facilities to designate an essential caregiver for in-person visitation. Explanation. During the COVID-19 pandemic, family and other caregivers were restricted from access to nursing homes and other group facilities. This proposed constitutional amendment would allow a resident to name a person to be their essential caregiver, and visits from their essential caregiver would become a resident's constitutional right. The legislature may provide guidelines for caregiver visitation policies and procedures. Arguments 4. For Texans in group care, visitation by a loved one can help combat loneliness, anxiety, and depression, and can provide advocacy and emotional support. For residents with no remaining connections, there is comfort in having outside visitors in the facility. Arguments against. This amendment takes away the ability of public health and certain government officials to restrict access by outsiders to group care facilities in order to protect the residents and the staff. Even if health and safety protocols are in place, visitation by outsiders could expose other residents and the staff to disease. Proposition 7. Property tax exemption. The constitutional amendment to allow the surviving spouse of a person who is disabled to receive a limitation on the school district ad valorem taxes on the spouse's resident homestead if the spouse is 55 years of age or older at the time of the person's death. Explanation. This proposition would update the Constitution to allow surviving spouses of disabled persons a limit on school district property taxes. Currently, this limitation is provided to homeowners over 65 years old and to disabled persons. To be eligible for this limit, the spouse must be at least 55 years old when the disabled person died and still live in the home. In 2019, the tax code was updated to allow this tax limitation for surviving spouses of disabled persons, but the legislature failed to authorize a proposed constitutional amendment. Some counties followed the tax code and some did not. For those that did not, eligible surviving spouses may be due a refund. Arguments 4. This amendment would protect the surviving spouse of a disabled person from losing an important benefit. The proposition validates a state law already passed and clarifies that the law is to be enforced. The proposed amendment passed with 0 no votes in both the Texas House and the Texas Senate, indicating broad bipartisan support. Arguments against. The passage could reduce tax revenues for school districts and other local taxing authorities. Any lower property values could decrease revenue and affect the state school funding formulas. This amendment could lead to further property tax exemptions, which could have negative effects on school and other local finances. Proposition 8. Property tax military. the constitutional amendment authorizing the legislature to provide for an exemption from ad valorem taxation of all or part of the market value of the resident's homestead of the surviving spouse of a member of the armed forces of the United States who is killed or fatally injured in the line of duty. Explanation. Currently, the surviving spouse of a member of the military who is killed in action is entitled to an exemption from property taxes. This exemption is for the property tax on the market value of the spouse's residence homestead if the spouse has not remarried. This amendment would expand eligibility for the same exemption from property taxes for spouses of military, for members of the military who are killed in the line of duty rather than in action or combat. This means that if their death was due to injuries that are not combat related, such as in a training exercise, it was still a result of their duties in the military. Arguments 4. This amendment would correct an oversight in current law to include surviving spouses of the military who were killed in the line of duty rather than in action. These additional surviving spouses have suffered the loss of their partner because of their military service and should be provided the same benefit. Death in combat for our country's soldiers should not be the determining factor on whether we honor their military service by providing relief for their spouse. Arguments against. This amendment will reduce tax revenues to school districts, counties, cities, and special districts by lowering property value. Many more military are killed in the line of duty than are killed in action. The estimated potential loss of tax revenue could be significant. Any lower property taxes could decrease revenue and affect the state school funding formula. This amendment would expand property tax exemption to another group of people, which could increase the tax burden for other property owners.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.